everyone. Thanks for joining us today, January 19th, 2021, on Earth Matters, here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, 89.1 FM Silver City, and on Las Cruces Community Radio, KTAL LP, 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, and I'm Executive Director of the Gila Resources Information Project. We're a nonprofit advocacy organization that promotes community health by protecting our environment and natural resources. This is the first show recorded in 2021, and we want to wish our listeners a Happy New Year. We're all relieved to have left 2020 behind, but we're off to a rocky start this year with violence in Washington, D.C. and more threatened at state capitals around the country with tomorrow's presidential inauguration. And we're still living with the ongoing tragedy of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, the New Mexico State Legislature starts its 60-day session in Santa Fe. And because of COVID and the need to prevent the spread of the disease, the session is largely virtual this year. Public participation will be quite different than in past years. Despite the challenges in conducting this year's session, the slate of environmental bills being introduced is ambitious, and there are a number of climate change and renewable energy bills, legislation to strengthen our bedrock environmental laws, and proposals for a just transition to a renewable energy economy. With me today to give us an overview of these bills are my guests, Camilla Feibelman, Executive Director of the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club, will join me for the first half of the show, and Charlie DeSalin, Staff Attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, will be with me for the second half of the show. Welcome to Earth Matters, Camilla.
Thanks, Allison. It's good to be here.
And it's great to have you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Weird New Year, awful New Year, but figuring yes. out how to make it positive.
We will get through it. Yeah. So as I said in the opening, this legislative session will be like no other we've experienced. And Camilla, maybe you can break down for us how the session will be conducted this year, given it will take place virtually. There are a lot of questions mm-hmm. about how it's going to work.
Yeah. Well, I think fortunately, both houses have gone through two almost virtual sessions last year with the summer session to deal with the COVID and economic crises, and then a second session in the fall to do more of that. And each house will handle it slightly differently. The Senate is intending to do something where they'll meet for a week in sort of a hybrid format that isn't dissimilar to what some of our schools have seen, where half of the body will be on the floor, half of the body will be in their offices. And then after that week, they'll go back out home and do virtual committee sessions and then reconvene and then go back out for committee sessions. The House will be almost entirely online, and both bodies will take public comment in their committee hearings. They did it slightly differently over the summer, where you know the House would have Zoom meetings and they'd unmute you when it was your turn to speak, and the Senate was just accepting written testimony. I don't think either of the bodies are clear exactly how that will work, except that they will have what they're calling Zoom Meisters on each meeting, and those people will help people navigate participating in this virtual way. And you know, there are some people who think, whoa, this is going to be a lot more difficult. I am a working mom of an 8-year-old stepdaughter and a 4-year-old of my own. And, you know, I really liked the summer session. I wanted to speak out on voting rights issues, and I could have dinner with my family. I could fold laundry while I was waiting my turn for a committee hearing. And, you know, even for people in southern New Mexico, where you have to drive hours and hours to get there only to have your committee meeting canceled, I think in a lot of ways, this is going to make our legislative process more accessible, but we'll see how it plays out in reality.
Yes, I agree. Someone who travels every year to the legislature, you know, 5 hours to Santa Fe, it is hopefully going to be a lot easier. When do you think we'll know more of the details in terms of public participation? When have we been told when to expect that information?
I think we should know within the first week exactly how it'll work. I think, you know, there'll be a lot of full body meeting that first week. I think, you know, some of it is going to depend, you know, just on how the security challenges with this weird moment are going to play out. But one thing that we try to provide to our members and partner groups is that intel. Once we know, we'll share it broadly. And at the end, maybe we can share our contact information for people who want to be, you know, part of that rapid response team where you can call into a committee hearing at the last minute and speak out, or, you know, text message or Facebook your elected representative to help move some of these pro-environmental bills along.
Yeah, that's great. Camilla, why don't you give everybody the contact information right now, and we'll repeat it at the end too.
Yeah, well, people can text us at 505-715-8388 or find more information about getting involved in the session at our website, which is riograndesierraclub.org.
Okay, that's excellent. So let's dive in. One of the major priorities for this session is to ensure that budgets are at least maintained and not slashed for state agencies responsible for environmental and natural resource protection. And I'm wondering, how are things looking now that the governor and the legislature have both released their budgets? What are we looking at?
Yeah, well, they were just released. And so we're still kind of scouring through the two proposals. And people might not know that there's a governor's budget and then a legislative budget that get sort of worked out first in the House and then in the Senate. Both of our big environmental agencies, the Environment Department and Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources, find themselves still well underfunded compared to how they were doing under the Richardson administration. And that's difficult and really problematic because these are the agencies that need to be doing inspections and oversight and enforcement on polluting industries like oil and gas. And so we've been advocating to see those budgets increased. And the area of the budget that needs those increases are called the general fund. You know, both agencies depend a lot on fees, but with oil and gas down and fewer visitors to our state parks, that fee income is down. They do get quite a bit of federal funds, but those federal funds can't be reassigned to other purposes without getting a ding on their audit. And so, you know, we've heard some good news out of both of the agencies that there may be some special appropriations specifically for dealing with climate issues. You have the Environment Department having suddenly to take on the OSHA compliance, like workplace compliance on COVID. And so, you know, at the same time, you know, really dealing with overseeing these big polluting industries. And you'd think, well, hey, on an oil and gas downturn, maybe they're polluting less. Well, it turns out they're just paying less attention at the industry level. And even the Environment Department did some flyovers with the EPA and found double the leaking of methane, a big global warming gas, than they saw last year. So there's a lot to do, and these agencies can't do their good work without proper funding. So we see some glimmers of hope, but it's going to be the legislators that need to really assure that New Mexicans are protected, that they have clean air and clean water.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's really, people should be tracking the budget, and there are a number of environmental groups working on this issue. So we'll be keeping people posted. Camilla, one of the big priorities this session is passage of the Civil Rights Act. And from an environmental perspective, this will give citizens the ability to sue for environmental violations. Tell us what the Civil Rights Act would do.
Yeah, well, and let me even take it first from a different direction. You know, over the summer, with the killing of George Floyd, and, you know, that being, you know, in such a visceral and surprising way, I think for many, while on the other hand, being reminded that this is something that happens all the time, where people are not safe in their environment. And so you might think, you know, what does policing have to do with the environment? Well, our urban environments are an environment, and people need to be safe in every environment. So it turns out that the Civil Rights Act will not only help on the environmental front, but it will also deal with a really specific issue with regard to policing, which is something called qualified immunity. And it basically means that if somebody is harmed by a state official, currently they cannot be sued for civil damages. That would take that protection away and give people who have lost their life or been badly injured more rights to be compensated. But the Civil Rights Act would also make many aspects of the state constitution actionable legally. And so, you know, there are mentions of the need to protect the environment in our Constitution, and the Green Amendment, which we'll talk about in a minute, will improve that language and expand it out to cultural protections. But the Civil Rights Act would make that constitutional language actionable from a legal perspective.
Okay, that makes sense. So you mentioned the Green Amendment. Tell us a little bit more about this proposal.
Yeah, so we're not the lead organization on this, but it's a very cool idea, and it's been done in a couple of other states. So the Green Amendment really improves the constitutional language around environmental protection in our Constitution, and again, makes that protection actionable, so that if a person is being harmed, or a community is being harmed, or an agency isn't taking proper action when it comes to the environment, that people have the right to sue over that. And, you know, one really cool thing that the team that's been leading this Green Amendment effort has done is to include cultural protections in addition to environmental protections. Now, it is worth remembering that this would be a constitutional amendment, so both houses would have to pass it with a minimum of 50%, and then it would go onto the ballot in a following year.
Yeah, that's right. So this is just really the first step in mm-hmm. getting this to become law. So, Camilla, you mentioned oil and gas, and Sierra Club and its partners have been working very hard to amend environmental laws to address produced water from the oil and gas industry. And I'm wondering, why do we need these legislative changes? Why aren't our current laws sufficient?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll take a minute just to talk about this liquid. You know, it's shorthand called produced water, which is a bit ironic because it's more like a terrible, you know, oil and gas waste liquid, I guess, might be the best way to talk about it. So people will remember that, you know, in fracking, there's a whole series of chemicals added into water. You know, it's shot down this future well to kind of frack it out. And then those liquids interact and mix with old salty waters way down, you know, into the depths of the earth. And, you know, those come back up potentially with radioactive elements up and out with the oil and gas. And so, you know, not only are you producing oil or gas, but you're also producing this waste liquid, and sometimes in much greater quantities than the oil and gas itself. And so there are a few questions about what to do. For example, should we really be using fresh water for such a purpose? Now, if you are going to drill, like, you know, there's going to be a moment where you're passing through aquifer zones, and you wouldn't want those to be interacting with chemicals. So there are certain areas where maybe fresh water is better, but not many. And so we want to limit the amount of fresh water being used. And then we want to see that ultimate liquid waste reused. But just because it's reused doesn't mean it's being managed well. And you can see that when it comes to the data that the agencies collect, where we're having a major produced water spill every day in New Mexico. And I'm sure many of you saw what Penny O'Coyne and her family experienced when a pipe burst near their home and they were doused in this produced liquid waste, had animals harmed by it. So this, just because something's being reused doesn't mean it's being done well or right or safely. And then, you know, although we would like to see this stuff reused as long as they are going to be fracking, but then there's this question of, could you use this liquid waste off the oil field? And that is something that we are opposed to. You know, there's not clear information about what's in this water. There's no science showing it's safe to be treated or used off the oil field. So in 2019, produced water legislation passed, but, you know, it wasn't a highly broadly vetted bill, and it ended up passing very quickly when two bills were amended together. And so we've been working with a technical team to look at a series of amendments that would make the management of produced water more protective of the environment, public health, and fresh water. And that's being sponsored by Antoinette Cedillo Lopez, a senator actually who represents me here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, super important legislation for all of our oil and gas fields in the state. So with that, we'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more with Camilla Feibelman of the Sierra Club about this year's legislative session that starts today. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project. And my guest today is Camilla Feibelman, Executive Director of the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. So Camilla, let's shift gears to climate legislation that will be introduced this session. Sierra Club and other groups like Conservation Voters New Mexico have championed a just transition to a clean energy economy, which culminated in groundbreaking legislation in 2016 called the Energy Transition Act. Can you give us some background on the ETA and let us know about legislation being introduced this session to build upon the success of the ETA?
Yeah, so the Energy Transition Act was the weaving together of three really important pieces of proposed legislation. First, an update to the requirements that utilities and co-ops provide us with certain amounts of renewable energy by certain years. And, you know, the last version of that bill was wrapping up in 2020. And so we needed to get those percentage requirements up for the future. And the second part of the bill was to be able to make that utility exit from fossil fuels like coal cheaper for ratepayers. So the bill gave the PRC a new tool called securitization, which is just basically refinancing. It's like if you buy a car and you want to get rid of that car before you've paid off the debt, this allows you to kind of refinance that investment and make it cheaper for you to pay it off over time. Doing that saves ratepayers so much money when the utility leaves coal that we're also able to finance money for just transition and helping communities who have provided so many of us with electricity over time with real funds to move forward. And so we've seen the Energy Transition Act basically take effect over this last year, and it's been pretty incredible. We've seen basically PNM leave San Juan Generating Station, in doing so, saving ratepayers about $7.45 a month on their rates. We've seen that coal being replaced by 100% renewable energy and battery storage, and we'll see the generation of about $40 million of just transition funds for severance pay for workers, not just at the plant, but also at the coal mine. And then of that $40 million, $20 million of it for community proposed projects around a just transition. So there are many aspects of this bill, but they braid together in a way that make all of it stronger, more more renewables, leaving fossil fuels for less money, and financing a just transition. So we're really pleased with the way it's been playing out. It is important to know, though, that the Energy Transition Act only applies to electric generation. So it doesn't deal with vehicles or buildings or the oil and gas industry. And so Representative Stansberry and others have been dealing with a climate solutions bill that would take these carbon reductions throughout New Mexico and our different industries. And then Representative Angelica Ruiz has been leading a coalition to articulate a just transition when it comes to workforce and revenue diversification. And so we're seeing support from leadership in both houses, some of our big climate champions and big economic justice and transition champions, all coming together to take a next major step for New Mexico and our impact on carbon, while also protecting communities as we do that.
Yes, that's really exciting. It's wonderful news. So great job, Camilla, and to all of your partners. And I'm also wondering if you could tell us about another bill related to the ETA that proposes to fix some issues with the Energy Transition Act. And maybe you can describe for us the issue and why this bill may not be necessary.
Yeah, I would really say there's no issue. Some legislators are bringing some amendments that I would say are based on well-intentioned, but a pretty serious misreading of the bill. And I won't go into all of the sort of nuance of what this is about. But for example, the ETA gave the Public Regulation Commission an additional power that they hadn't had before. Before, a utility would have to come to the PRC and request to leave a plant. The PRC couldn't pull them in and say, look, you're not moving quickly enough. So the bill gives the PRC that power, and it has some sort of requirements around that power that are being misunderstood. And then the second piece of it, we think, is another misunderstanding. It's saying, you know, oh, the Public Regulation Commission can't review whether it was prudent of the utility to invest in a plant, and therefore they shouldn't be able to recover that investment in rates. However, there's nothing in the Energy Transition Act that keeps the Public Regulation Commission from deciding on whether an investment was prudent. And in fact, the Sierra Club filed a motion saying, hey, PRC, you really ought to decide on some of these questions about what PNM spent on the Four Corners power plant near the San Juan Generating Station before you allow PNM to leave that plant. None of those issues, though, really have anything to do with the Energy Transition Act. And we think that the focus should be on climate change, not on stuff that was well debated and discussed in 2019 and could be dealt with in other ways.
Right. That makes sense. So, Camilla, there are a number of other climate and renewable energy bills that you've been working on. Maybe you could flag for us a few of the important ones that will be considered.
There are many. I know lots of people have heard about community solar, and there's been a great team of groups leading on that. And that bill will be filed with sponsors of Liz Stefanik's and Representative Patricia Ruibal Caballero. That there will be a sustainable buildings tax credit. This is an interesting one. You know, the governor had passed an executive order on climate protections when she first came in, and she ordered improvements and updates to the energy conservation building codes. We were way behind in updating those codes. And now that they have been updated, thanks to this administration, the tax credits that you can get are really just meeting code. And so this bill kind of increases the requirements. It allows for some remodeling of existing buildings. it allows people to use and get some tax credits for certain technologies that make buildings more efficient and your energy cheaper. And then there's another bill that does a whole bunch of things that are very important. One is protecting people from accumulated debt to the utilities after the moratorium on COVID ends so that people aren't having their electricity turned off. But it'll also do things like let utilities set low-income utility rates, which hasn't been allowed up until now, and it'll give some block grants allowing counties and cities to apply for funds to help low-income folks weatherize their homes and make things, make energy a bit cheaper, if I can put it that way. So there's a lot happening, and I will say, Allison, we're doing tons of trainings for people on these issues. And so, you know, folks can text me if they're wanting to get that schedule. Again, it's 505-715-8388, and we'll get you hooked up with some of our trainings on these bills and how to help.
Yeah, that sounds great. And Camilla, what are some of the other bills that Sierra Club is working on that you might like to talk about, like trapping? I mean, that was one that...
That's a good point. You know, I'd been so busy talking about all the climate-related stuff that there are some really important, you know, lands and water and wildlife bills. We have and are part of a coalition called Trap Free New Mexico, which would ban trapping on public lands. And you may have seen these terrible stories about people out with their dogs and their dogs getting caught in traps, or protected animals getting caught in traps. It's just terrible. And most of the folks who are trapping are doing it for, you know, pelt exports out of state and even out of the country. And so we're hoping that that will be the year for this to pass. There's also another great bill being led by Audubon, which is an environmental database bill that adds layers into an existing wildlife database that UNM manages for the Department of Game and Fish. And so, you know, there's a lot to do, and, you know, we just love to have people's help in doing all of this.
Yes, absolutely. And we have collaborated with you in the past on lobby training here in Silver City. But of course, things are different this year since we're all operating in the virtual environment. But you do have some lobby trainings scheduled. Maybe you could tell people how to get connected to those. And as you said, how to get connected to your rapid response group.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll have a training on the trapping bill called Roxy's Law on Wednesday, the 20th, tomorrow at 3 p.m. And then we'll go over some of the land and water conservation bills on Friday, January 22nd at noon. And again, if you'd like to get involved, text us at 505-715-8388. But I think, you know, probably the most important thing that folks can do right now is to get connected with your legislator. So go on to nmlegis.gov, and in that banner that scrolls across the top, you can see their special contact information that people can access their legislators from afar. Look for them on Facebook, you know, friend them, send them a messenger note. Hey, you know, wishing you luck in this tough session. Introduce yourself if you don't know them already. You can follow them on Twitter. Look up their name in Google and just understand what they're prioritizing. Look on their website and see if they have a town hall coming up in the next couple of days before the session starts. The best way to be an effective grassroots lobbyist is to create a relationship with your legislator, and that can start today.
Absolutely. Thanks for those tips, Camilla, for people to get connected virtually, because those are all going to be important ways. And I think everybody should sort of have a perspective of experimentation this session, because we're all going to be trying to figure out sort of what channels work best to contact our legislators and to participate. So thank you for those tips, Camilla. And with that, Camilla Feibelman of the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club, thank you so much for joining us today and educating us on the exciting environmental bills under consideration in this year's legislative session.
Thank you, Allison, and hope to see you on the Zoom legislative sessions.
Yes, you will. And thanks again for coordinating and really keeping all of us on track as an environmental community here in New Mexico. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Allison.
Okay, let's take a short break. And when we return, Charlie DeSalin, staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, will be with us to continue our discussion of priority environmental bills in the 2021 legislative session. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project. Joining me for the second half of today's show is Charlie DeSalin, staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. And we'll continue talking about environmental bills under consideration in this year's legislative session. Welcome to Earth Matters, Charlie.
Thank you, Allison. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on here today.
Yeah, and thanks for making time. It's a busy time right now with the legislative session starting today. And Charlie, before we jump in, tell us a little bit about the New Mexico Environmental Law Center.
Sure. The Law Center was started back in 1987 by Doug Meeklejohn, and it is a nonprofit public interest law firm, and we specialize in representing local environmental organizations and community groups on environmental matters and environmental justice matters.
Yes, and I should say, just for in the interest of full disclosure, that the New Mexico Environmental Law Center represents my organization, GRIP, Gila Resources Information Project, in a number of legal proceedings. So we are really appreciate working with you, Charlie, and the Law Center. So Charlie, you all have a number of legislative priorities this session. Maybe you could just give us a quick overview of your the environmental bills you'll be working on, and then we'll get into some of the details here in a couple of minutes.
Sure. There are really five bills that are our top priorities. So I'll just go over them quickly, and then we can discuss them more detail in a minute. So the first one is the Private Right of Action Bill, which would amend our environmental laws. The second one is what we call the Stringency Bill, amendment to several of our environmental laws. Then there's a Greenhouse Gas Bill, which we're working on with a number of organizations. And I think Camilla talked a little bit about that earlier. Then there's a civil penalties adjustment bill under our environmental laws. And then finally is a bill to deal with produce water from the oil and gas, industry, which I understand Camilla also spoke about this morning.
Yes. And let's start with your first priority, the Private Right of Action Bill, which I believe already has a bill number, House Bill 50. And this, of course, is something the Law Center has been trying to put in place for a number of years. So tell us what you've got for this session.
Yeah, sure. So the Private Right of Action Bill, you're right, it's House Bill 50. And it's being sponsored by Representative Georgine Lewis. And what that bill does is it allows a private individual, a private citizen, to bring a lawsuit against any person, any company, any other entity that is in violation of the law. And it would amend several of our environmental laws, the Air Quality Control Act, the Water Quality Act, the Hazardous Waste Act, the Solid Waste Act, and the Oil and Gas Act. And it does not amend the Mining Act because we already have a private right of action provision in the New Mexico Mining Act. Now, under any of these provisions, under any of these laws, for a person to bring a lawsuit, they would have to have some concrete interest in the violations or the consequences, the pollution that's being caused as a result of the violations. But if they have that, what we call standing, then they would have the authority to go into court and to bring a lawsuit seeking civil penalties and seeking an injunction and a court order to require the company to come into compliance.
Yeah. And Charlie, just a quick follow-up question. What areas of the state, especially like in the Air Quality Act, are having problems right now? And why is this bill so important? Like, what are some of the issues that are going on in the state right now where people could use this new tool?
Well, there are a number of things. One of them is the area around the South Valley of Albuquerque. There has been a lot of industrial development there, and the air quality in that area of Albuquerque has been a problem now for quite a while. And there are a number of local individuals and community organizations that are trying to get the agencies to consider more carefully consider air permitting, and they haven't had much success. So I think this would make it easier for a lot of folks to require that the permits that are issued under particularly the Air Quality Control Act are being monitored and complied with. There are also problems in the oil and gas field, both in the San Juan Basin to the north and the Permian Basin in the southeast. There is a lot of oil and gas drilling that's going on, and there's a lot of operators out there, and the Oil Conservation Division, which regulates those operations, just doesn't have the resources to be able to follow everything that's going on. So it's helpful and it's important for individuals that live down there to be able to enforce the law and monitor the operations themselves.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, hopefully that'll pass, because that's something we need in our toolbox. So moving on, Charlie, the Climate Solutions Act is super important in bringing down our emissions of greenhouse gases in the state of New Mexico. Tell us more about this bill being sponsored by Melanie Stansberry and some other legislators.
So this bill, it's important to understand that back in 2010, under the Richardson administration, the Environmental Improvement Board adopted regulations limiting greenhouse gases. It was not perfect. It was a cap and trade bill, but it would have gotten the state on track to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Almost the first thing that the Martinez administration did when they came in was to repeal those regulations. So this bill it does quite a number of things. I think Camilla covered some of them. It would codify, it would put in place the Climate Change Leadership Council, which is currently has been established under an executive order. This bill would make it part of the law. The second thing that it would do, and this is the most substantive thing, is it would require state agencies, and this is mostly the Environment Department and the Environmental Improvement Board, to adopt regulations to limit greenhouse gas emissions. And that's sort of an industry-wide requirement. It also would cover motor vehicles, and it would cover buildings. So it's a fairly comprehensive bill on greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, so we have a lot to catch up on in terms of making progress on greenhouse gas emission reduction. So I'm glad that bill is being introduced. So moving on, the stringency legislation in the Hazardous Waste Act and Air Quality Act will improve regulation of hazardous waste and air quality in New Mexico. So tell us more about what this bill proposes to do.
Yeah, sure. And that's being sponsored by Senate Majority Leader Wirth. The stringency bill would amend two of our statutes, two of our New Mexico statutes, the Air Quality Control Act and the Hazardous Waste Act. Now, both of these statutes follow federal law, which requires states to adopt their own regulations. And it requires, both of them require the Environmental Improvement Board to adopt regulations in one case for air quality and in the other case for the management of hazardous waste. And those regulations have to be at least as stringent as the federal regulations, okay? And that's kind of a federal requirement. The federal government sets the floor, but both the Air Quality Control Act and the Hazardous Waste Act, and those are New Mexico laws, provide that the regulations adopted by the Environmental Improvement Board must be no more stringent than the federal regulations. And so that kind of constrains what New Mexico can do. We're kind of bound to follow the federal government. And that's a problem because we in New Mexico should be able to enact or adopt more stringent regulations if that makes sense for New Mexico. And it's particularly problematic because the last few years, the current federal administration, the Trump administration, has been rolling back a lot of federal regulations, and particularly air quality regulations and water quality regulations. And under our laws, because of this no more stringent than clause, we're obligated to follow suit. So the bill would strike those provisions from the Air Quality Control Act and the Hazardous Waste Act, thereby allowing the Environmental Improvement Board to adopt regulations that are more stringent than the federal regulations if we think it's appropriate.
That makes sense. We don't want to be hamstringed by the federal government's rollbacks to these bedrock environmental laws. So that sounds very important. Well, Charlie, it's time to take a short break. We'll be right back to continue our discussion with Charlie DeSalin, staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project. I'm talking with Charlie DeSalin, staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, about priority environmental bills in this year's legislative session that starts today. So, Charlie, there is a bill to adjust penalties for violations of environmental rules. Why do these penalty fees need to be adjusted?
Yes, Allison, the bill would adjust the maximum penalties that can be assessed under several environmental statutes, New Mexico statutes, the Air Quality Control Act, the Water Quality Act, the Hazardous Waste Act, the Solid Waste Act, and the Mining Act. So these provisions, these maximum penalty provisions, were all enacted back in about 1990. And since that time, there has been a considerable amount of inflation that has effectively eroded the amount of those penalties and the deterrent effect of those penalties. So the whole purpose of civil penalties in environmental laws is to deter an operator from violating the law, because any violation subjects that operator to a penalty, and the maximum penalties are set forth in the statute. So given the inflation that's taken place in the last 30 years now, the maximum penalties in each of these laws would be doubled under this bill. And that what this really does is brings us back to what the legislature originally intended when it enacted these bills. You know, a certain level of deterrence, which has since been eroded by inflation. So we're going back to that original level.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. So Charlie, Camilla mentioned earlier in our first segment, the produced water bill, but that's also a priority for the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Do you want to say a few words about that bill?
Yeah, that's the fifth bill that is among our top priorities. And that bill would, most importantly, it does a number of things, but most importantly, it would prevent produced water from oil and gas production, which is really pretty nasty stuff, from being used outside the oil and gas field. So, for example, it could not be used for agricultural purposes to water crops or livestock.
Yes, absolutely. There needs to be a lot of work to make sure that the oil and gas industry is not contaminating our water, and it's and public health threatened. So moving on, Charlie, Representative Nathan Small is sponsoring a bill to amend the Mining Act to set up a forfeiture fund. And I'm wondering if you can explain to our listeners why we need this new forfeiture fund.
Yeah, just briefly, the whole point of that bill, and this is also one that we support, although it's not among our priorities, but it would ensure that the financial assurance that mining companies have to put up, and this is a current requirement under both the Mining Act and the Water Quality Act, mining operations have to put up financial assurance to ensure that when mining operations cease, the mine will be properly closed down and reclaimed. So that money has to be put up front while the company or before the company even starts operating. And what this bill is designed to do is ensure that that money is sort of separated out. So it's no longer part of the company's assets because when the company goes into bankruptcy, if the company goes into bankruptcy, the bankruptcy trustee is going to want to get every asset that it can get its hands on that the company owns to distribute to the creditors. And if the financial assurance is still being held by the company, there may be a big battle with the bankruptcy trustee over what can be done with that money. And that's not the intent of the financial assurance provisions of the Mining Act and the Water Quality Act. So by segregating this money, that helps to ensure that the money will be used for closure and reclamation of the mine.
Yes, that makes sense. So this is certainly a very important bill for us here in Grant County and southwestern New Mexico, where we've got a lot of copper mining going on. So GRIP will be supporting this bill. So another important bill that's also been in the legislature, up for consideration in the legislature for a number of years, Charlie, is the community solar bill. So tell us a bit about what this year's version of the bill provides for.
Yeah, so the community solar bill, I'll go quickly here because I know we're running out of time. It provides for small communities, even apartment buildings, to set up their own power distribution systems so that, for example, they can set up solar collection systems and then distribute the electricity within their community. Currently, under PRC rules, that's the Public Regulatory Commission, that's not allowed. So the community solar legislation would allow that to happen.
Yeah, that's an important bill. Having this distributed solar around the state is super important. And I know there's a lot of interest and has been a lot of interest in the bill for a number of years. And another climate-related bill that the Law Center is supporting is the Electric Vehicle Tax Credit Bill. What, tell us more about that one.
Yeah, that's that would allow a tax credit for people who buy electric vehicles, or for commercial entities that buy electric vehicles or electric vehicle infrastructure. And that bill came very close to passing 2 years ago, but the legislature ran out of time, and so it was not enacted. It would have been enacted if it had been allowed to get to a vote.
Okay. And so, Charlie, are there any other bills that the Law Center is supporting that might not necessarily be your top priorities, but still that you'll be supporting? Anything else you'd like to talk about?
Yes. Right, Allison. There is one other thing that I'll mention, and this is not a comprehensive list. There's quite a lot of stuff that's out there. But there are a few things that I want to mention, and another one is the Green Amendment Bill, which is being sponsored by Senator Antoinette Zedillo-Lopez, and that would create a constitutional amendment to make environmental a safe and healthy environment a constitutional right. And that's something that we are supporting. That it's important to note that if that passes the legislature, there's still another step. It's still got to be approved by the voters. But that would be a good change to our Constitution that we're supporting.
Okay, so Charlie, if people want to get more information on the Law Center's legislative priorities, how can they get that info?
There should be information on our five top priority bills that I discussed on our website, and people can get in touch with us directly if they have questions. By email or by telephone.
Okay, can you give us your website address?
It's nmelc.org, and my email is C DeSailan, that's CDESAILLAN at nmelc.org.
Okay, that's great. And we'll have Charlie and Camilla's contact information and website info on our GMCR Earth Matters page for this show. So folks can go and get more information on our website. Well, thank you so much, Charlie DeSailan, for joining us today on Earth Matters. It's been a pleasure talking to you about the session.
Well, thank you, Allison. I enjoyed our discussion today.
All right. So a podcast of today's show and past programs are available in the Earth Matters archive at gmcr.org. Thank you to our audio engineers, Marcus Hansen and Michael Allen. Join us next week for another episode of Earth Matters here on Gila Membrus Community Radio, 89.1 FM Silver City, and Las Cruces Community Radio, KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces.